Blog Talk Radio.
From the world we see to the unseen world we sometimes see that makes us stand in awe of God's universe, this is Betsy Belega welcoming you from Cape Washington in the south to Nunavut and the Northern Lights in the Arctic Circle, from the White House gates to Lionsgate, from Casablanca to everyone listening around God's globe. Hi, Gigi. This is Tuning In with Betsy from marvelous Manhattan and terrific Toronto, and perhaps some of our Canadian listeners know that Parliament has been dissolved, and we will have an election, I believe it's October the 19th. But this means, thank God, that only the three parties can advertise. I got a very disgusting piece of literature in my mailbox the other day, and it said, important information, important election information, but it didn't say PCs, it didn't say the Liberal Party, it didn't say the NDP. So I thought, what the heck is this? And I opened it up, and it was someone who had made a postcard with Justin Trudeau's picture, along with two pictures of two aborted fetuses, one fetus at 10 weeks old and one at 20 weeks old. Absolutely, totally classless and disgusting. And that just shows you how classless and how hateful people are. You may not like any of the candidates for prime minister, but watch out, baby, because you know what goes around comes around. And so today, in our strange news that makes you go, department, all the items I'm going to mention are from the Epoch Times newspaper, which is a Toronto Chinese-Canadian newspaper. And the first caught my eyes on their front page. They are a weekly newspaper. They publish on a Thursday. And so this past week, here's the headline. The Echo is Amazon's cloud-based voice recognition system that records and analyzes your speech patterns, vocabulary, and your personal preferences to better serve your Internet of Things needs. Now, my question is, are you unwittingly bringing spying technology into your home? My guess is yes. Do you want convenience or your privacy? So now I'm going to read just a few things from the paper that they discuss. And the first one is surveillance and awareness. Fears about internet surveillance have heightened over the past 2 years as former National Security Agency contractor Edward Snowden, which I'm sure my listeners know who he is, released documents revealing that the U.S. government's terrorist-fighting programs have included these mining personal information collected by a variety of technology companies. And I would say that would be Amazon, Google, Microsoft. Yeah. So just remember that. So many things to be wary of. And I actually saw this on the United States, one of the networks, maybe it was ABC or NBC last week. So then we have the next story they have, and I'm not going to read it, but the headline is, was the China stock market crash engineered? And why would they do that? And another story they have, which I love, citizens at the Cornwallis Street Baptist Church in Halifax, Nova Scotia, which in Canada we say that's down east, even Montreal. To me, I would say Montreal is north of me. No, here they say it's down east. Well, if you look on a map, it's north of Toronto, but they call it down east. But anyhow, Nova Scotia, people gathered there at the Baptist Church Wednesday, July 29th, last Wednesday, to protest the Confederate flag removed from Canada and banned in Canada. So if anybody from South Carolina or the United States is listening, just know that there are people here in Canada standing in solidarity with you. And then, the very next very interesting story that I saw, Elon Musk, and that's spelled E-L-O-N, Elon Musk, he's the CEO of Tesla Motors, and Stephen Hawking, who needs no introduction, they're urging a ban on killer robots. Now, yesterday I had mentioned that there's a hotel in Japan that's run by robots. And you know Betsy's not going to be booking there anytime soon. But you also must know that some governments are creating robots specifically to kill their enemies. So instead of human beings getting killed, in the future warfare, it looks will be robot against robot, which I don't want anybody, anything or anyone being hurt on this earth. And then we have, according to Senator John Hoeven, President Obama is going to turn down the Keystone XL pipeline project. That'll make a lot of environmentalists very, very happy. So if you ask me what state the senator is from, I'll tell you. He's from the great state of North Dakota. And maybe you haven't heard about the Epoch Times, and that's spelled E-P-O-C-H, Epoch. And it is a Chinese-Canadian newspaper, as I mentioned. They'd like you to know that as of Wednesday, July 29th, at 6:28 p.m., that's when they went to press, 210,305,364 Chinese people quit the Chinese Communist Party. So God bless those people, and I'll say that just shows many, 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 and if you remember Tiananmen Square in 1989, many, 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 many wonderful people that live in China don't wish to be living in a communist country. So I'm going to continue today. We're talking about the book of Daniel. And yesterday we left off at the story of the first three horns. So let me continue. In 286 BC, the emperor, here I go with my names again, Cletian, divided the Roman Empire into east and west for administrative purposes. This was symbolized by the two legs described in Daniel 2. Serious trouble lay ahead, however, for the western leg. By 400 AD, the empire in the west was in its death throes, and we all know what the death throes sound like for empires. Following barbarian incursions on the frontiers, Rome itself was sacked and looted for the first time in 8 centuries by Alaric and his Visigoths in 409 AD. As the Roman Empire in the west collapsed, 3 groups of barbarian invaders, the Vandals, the Heruli, and the Ostrogoths, sought to establish themselves as the successors to the Roman emperors of the west. The emperor in the east officially recognized each as a continuation of legitimate Roman government in the West. Yet another emerging ruler in the West eventually obtained their overthrow and their ouster. This emerging ruler was the Bishop of Rome. How interesting. While the Western emperors grew weaker, his power and stature increased. This involved not only a growing religious power over the professing Christians community, but civil and political power as well. The Vandals, the Heruli, and the Ostrogoths particularly disturbed him, the bishop. While they professed Christianity, it was a non-Trinitarian brand called Arianism. And lately, I've been finding there's a lot of religions that I thought were Christian, but they don't believe in the Holy Trinity. I don't know about you, but I was taught Father, Son, and Holy Ghost. So I continue. They were not orthodox and were therefore viewed as a threat to the religious unity of the empire. The Vandals invaded North Africa in 429 AD. After several years of fighting, they entered into a treaty in 435 whereby the Romans recognized them as the legitimate continuation of the empire in North Africa. The Vandals sought to expand their power as successor to Rome. In 455, they even pillaged the city of Rome itself. They were so thorough that to this day, the name Vandal is attached to those who destroy others' property. Yes, it shows up in the Toronto newspaper quite a bit. But ultimately, the Vandals were uprooted. In Africa, the Vandals were hated as Arians by the Church of Rome, and they had to deal with serious Berber revolts. But their power was not broken until the 533 to 548 Vandalic Wars of Eastern Emperor Justinian. In 476, about 20 years after the Vandals sacked Rome, the Heruli, under their leader, Odoacer, deposed Romulus Augustulus, the last Western Roman emperor. The Eastern emperor, Zeno, recognized Odoacer as a legitimate continuation of Roman government in Italy. Odoacer was an Arian, however, and after an appeal by the Bishop of Rome, Zeno dispatched Theodoric, the leader of the Ostrogoths, to drive out the Herculi in 488. The Orthodox bishops of Italy, disliking Odoacer's Arianism, supported the Arian invader, who was Theodoric, as representing an almost Orthodox emperor. With their help, Theodoric broke Odoacer's sturdy resistance in 5 years of war and persuaded him to a compromise peace in 493. He invited Odoacer and his son to dine with him in Ravenna, led them generously and fed them generously, and then he killed them with his own hand. So how's that for the dinner party to end all dinner parties? You can't trust anybody, can you? Now, whether you lived in ancient times, the Dark Ages, the Middle Ages, or current, present, modern times, Italy, though accepted as a means of getting rid of the Herculi, remained unpopular with the Bishop of Rome. And here we go, and the Roman Catholic population. General Belisarius, who had been sent from Constantinople in 533 AD with 500 transport ships and 92 warships to rid Africa of the Vandals, came to Italy in 536 to drive out the Ostrogoths. The Ostrogothic forces were meager and divided the people of Rome, hailed Belisarius as a liberator. The clergy welcomed him as a Trinitarian. He entered Rome unopposed. Thus, the first three horns that Daniel talks about were plucked up at the behest and request of the Bishop of Rome, the little horns of Daniel chapter 7. The stage was being set for the true revival of the Roman Empire in the West. This revival in 554 AD, like all the revivals that have occurred ever since, involved the Bishop of Rome blessing and his role as an intimate player in the various continuations of the Empire of Ancient Rome. Now, do you know why in the United States of America we have separation of state and church? I learned that as a child. Chapter 3, here we go. Rome, ancient and future master of the world. Now we're talking about the beast, the Antichrist this week. The tourist posters display a fascinating Rome, if you're going to visit Rome. We all know it's a city that was founded on seven hills, covered with the architectural glories of the past and the present. Rome is a city of contrasts. We have old buildings and ancient ruins. They're right beside thriving modern city buildings. 27 centuries have come and gone since its legendary founding at the hands of Romulus and Remus. During this long expanse of time, this remarkable, unparalleled role in the history of Western civilization as a seat of ongoing intrigue and power, and it certainly is a city of intrigue and power struggles. Nestled within the city of Rome is the world's smallest sovereign territory, Vatican City. Maintaining its own diplomatic relations with all the major power, this little tiny city-state, ruled by the Roman Pontiff, by the Pope, is a full participant in international affairs. The Vatican aspires to be far more than a mere participant, however. It seeks to once again achieve the guiding role it played for so many centuries. But if you're familiar with St. Malachi and his prophecies, I know that my listeners are aware that the current Pope, St. Francis, is the last Pope. So just by that, you know that Christ is coming back soon, very, very soon. The Roman ancient empires received a fatal wound with the death of the last emperor in 476 AD. That was not the end of the story. The first three kingdoms springing out of the old Roman Empire, the Vandals, the Heruli, and Ostrogoths, which we just talked about, were uprooted. The might of the Eastern Emperor Justinian accomplished that plucking up at the behest of Rome's Pope. Justinian's imperial restoration, as it was called, in 554, healed the deadly wound and launched the first of six historical attempts to revive and carry on the empire of ancient Rome. And according to the Bible, there is a seventh, and I'm aware of this, and I'm sure you are too, listeners, there's a seventh and final revival yet to come. Your life and my life are going to be affected profoundly by events yet to take place in what its residents call the Eternal City. Now, the deadly wound is healed. Let's talk about that. With the conclusion of the Gothic Wars in 553 AD, Italy was left in poverty and disorder. Rome had been captured, besieged, looted, and starved. Finally, the armies of the Eastern Roman Emperor, Justinian, stood victorious. Justinian's armies had succeeded in reconquering Italy and remnants of the Western Empire. But how was it to be governed? The answer lay in an alliance of church and state, which we try to stay away from that in the United States, that has shaped the history of Western Europe ever since. Though secular authority in the West had collapsed, the survival of ecclesiastical organization under the Bishop of Rome, that's the Pope, appeared even to the emperors as the salvation of the state. In 554, Justinian promulgated a decree requiring that, quote, fit and proper persons able to administer the local government be chosen as governors of the province by the bishops and chief persons of each province, unquote. This event is known in history as the Imperial Restoration. The emperors in Byzantium continued as nominal rulers of a revived Imperium Romanum in the West from 554 until 800 AD. By the terms of Justinian's decree, however, the bishops of Rome, now they were called popes, held the reins of power and were thus the real riders sitting astride the imperial beast in the West. It's important to note at this point a significant difference between the beast described in Revelation 13 and the one described in Revelation 17. The beast of Revelation 13 corresponds to what Daniel saw in Daniel 7. John described a creature that began in Nebuchadnezzar's Babylon and continued on to his day. Out of the seventh head, the Roman Empire would arise 10 kingdoms. Daniel 7 explained that the first three of those 10 horns would be plucked out. However, the beast of Revelation 17 is different. It's a creature ridden by the woman, unlike the earlier description. The beast in Revelation 17 is the one that was and is not the Roman Empire after the deadly wound is healed. This is what Hist has ironically and misleadingly labeled the Holy Roman Empire dominated by the Church of Rome, meaning the Catholic Church, which has continued from 554 AD through various revivals to our modern times. But in Revelation chapter 17, verse 11, it explains that this beast is the eighth and is of the seven and goeth into perdition. It is a continuation of the seven-headed creature described in Revelation 13. But it is in some ways like an eighth head on the creature since it began after the last head of the beast of Revelation 13 receives a deadly wound. The seven heads of the Revelation 17 beast are seven kingdoms. They are the seven resurrections of the Holy Roman Empire corresponding to the last seven of the 10 horns of Daniel 7 and Revelation 13. The 10 horns of Revelation 17 are also 10 kings or kingdoms. They give power, final revival of the Holy Roman Emperor, and will be destroyed by Christ at his coming. Thank God for that. Thus, corresponding to the 10 toes on the image described in Daniel 2. Now look more closely at the history of the seven heads mentioned in Revelation 17. In the years after the imperial restoration, the Eastern emperors generally focused their attention closer to home. The protection and security that the Eastern emperors provided for the West became negligible. Private negotiations between Charles, King of the Franks, and Leo, Bishop of Rome, were held to resolve this problem. The results of the negotiations were made manifest in 800 AD. On Christmas Day, as Charlemagne, who was King of the Franks, in sandals of a Patriarch Romanus, he knelt before St. Peter's altar in prayer. Pope Leo suddenly produced a jeweled crown and set it upon the king's head. The congregation, perhaps instructed beforehand to act according to ancient rituals, as the Senatus Populus Romanus confirming a coronation, thrice cried out, "Hail to Charles the Augustus, crowned by God the Great, and peace-bringing Emperor of the Romans." Now, as we hear that, "Hail to Charles the Augustus, crowned by God," today I finally watched the movie The Queen with Helen Mirren. It's been around maybe for about 5 years, but it happened to be on Oprah's network today, this afternoon, and I watched it. And of course, it was basically about Princess Diana's, well, she's not a princess, but I still call her the Princess Diana, about her death. And in it, Tony Blair and the people, the Queen's attendants, they all said, Elizabeth, she is from the older times, and she does believe, and I was taught this as a child, that kings and queens on earth are chosen by God, and that Queen Elizabeth still, and I get that. That's the way she was raised. That was her upbringing. And when Diana died, she didn't think that much of her. She didn't consider her Her Royal Highness. But she it was just her thinking and upbringing, the way she was raised. So the same thing goes way back centuries and centuries. So as we say, there's no coincidence in the universe that I saw that movie today, and this is up in the readings today. So Charles the King. The royal head was anointed with holy oil. The Pope saluted Charlemagne as Emperor and Augustus. After several years of dispute, the Eastern Emperor at Byzantium recognized Charlemagne as co-emperor. The Imperium in the West passed to yet a second head since the days of the deadly wound in 476 and its subsequent healing in 554. Both times were at papal behest and with papal blessing. So even back then, the Pope held a lot of power, as they still do to this day. As historian Will Durant puts it, out of this intimate cooperation of church and state came one of the most brilliant ideas in the history of statesmanship, the transformation of Charlemagne's reign into a Holy Roman Empire that should have behind it all the prestige, the sanctity, and stability of both imperial and papal Rome. During the century and a half that followed Charlemagne's coronation, his empire slowly disintegrated under weak successors. By 936, the German Saxons, a powerful group in Central Europe. In 955, Otto, Duke of the Saxons and King of the Germans, defeated the Magyars, who were attempting to invade Western Europe from the east. Several years later, he entered Italy at the request of Pope John XII to restore him to power, and in the aftermath received the imperial crown as Pavia in 962. Thus, once again, the ghost of the Roman Empire was summoned to sanction the successful state building of a semi-barbarian king. Amazing, isn't it? Just amazing. Things that make you go, How did Otto's contemporaries and their successors view the significance of his revival of the empire? Well, historian Robert Herzstein wrote, as a mere term, but as a universal Christian regent for God on earth to exist until the coming of the Antichrist. Like Charlemagne, Otto received his throne through the papal claim that the Roman Church had been the only imperial elector since the early 4th century. The Holy Roman Empire was thus, to a large extent, German in its ethnic and political base, Christian in its moral justification, and Roman in its claim to legitimacy and universality. In an essay titled The Emperor as a Regency for God on Earth, noted Austrian historian Friedrich Herr wrote, the task of the empire was to be God's protagonist on earth, to be God's representative on earth, to fulfill his aims here, to protect Christianity and the church, and to preserve the righteousness of God and the divine order of the universe on earth. The earthly empire was a transitory reflection of the eternal city of God. Imperial symbols, this claim was displayed to the whole world, and the imperial apple filled with earth from the four corners of the world. The emperor holds the whole world in his hand. Now, who does that sound like? Isn't there a hymn? He's got the whole world in his hands. Very strange, isn't it? Or just a coincidence? The emperor called the imperial crown Corona Urbis et Orbis, which means the crown of Rome and of the globe. He viewed himself as the carpet, and that's caput, C-A-P-U-T, caput, mundi, and as the dominator Orbis et Urbis, head of the world and ruler of the globe and of Rome. So talk about megalomania. Otto's revived empire continued for almost 300 years. Finally, with the death of Conrad IV in 1250, empire became so rent by rival factions that a 19-year interrogation, time without an emperor, resulted. In its aftermath, Rudolf I was elected emperor in 1273, the first of the Habsburg family to be elevated to the imperial throne. The apex of this fourth revival of the old Roman imperium was the crowning of Rudolf's descendant, Charles V, in Bologna by Pope Clemens VII in 1530. Charles ruled over a vast empire from his mother, Joan, who was the daughter of Ferdinand and Isabella of Spain. And we all know that Ferdinand and Isabella had patronized Christopher Columbus to send him over here to discover not the West, well, Indies, but he discovered America. But we all know in Newfoundland that the Vikings got here way ahead of Christopher Columbus. So his mother, Joan, who was the daughter of Ferdinand and Isabella of Spain, he had inherited Spain and all Spanish possessions in the New World. From his father, he inherited the vast Habsburg domain in Germany, Italy, and Central Europe. After Charles V, Habsburg power waned. By the 18th century, I tell you, every time Betsy Belega does her show, somebody has to call me on the phone. After Charles V, Habsburg power waned. By the 18th century, the Holy Roman Emperor was an increasingly empty title. In the final decade of the 18th century, all of Europe was shaken by the French Revolution and its aftermath. A man both highly gifted and supremely ambitious came to power in France, and we all know his name was Napoleon Bonaparte, and he aspired to do far more than the presidency of a French emperor or even become a new king of France. His ambition could only be satisfied by the reestablishment of the Roman Empire, with himself as the emperor. As historian Will Durant notes, of rivaling Charlemagne and uniting Western Europe in the story of civilization. Napoleon considered himself a successor to Caesar and Charlemagne. He staged a revolt, which he won by a vote, or I'm sorry, he staged a plebiscite, which he won by a vote of 3,572,329 to 2,569 votes. Napoleon had the French Senate proclaim him emperor on May the 18th, 1804. Immediately, he began negotiations with Pope Pius VII to come to Paris and consecrate him as emperor. There's a very famous picture, a painting of that. The negotiations were successful, and the coronation occurred on December the 2nd. The Habsburgs of Austria felt keenly for successive diplomatic and military pushes of Napoleon, especially his assumption of the imperial title. 2 years later, at Napoleon's instigation, 16 princes and their states withdrew from the Holy Roman Empire, formed the Confederation of the Rhine, and asked Napoleon to take them under his protection as a part of his empire. The following month, on August the 6th, 1806, Francis II renounced his now empty title as Emperor of the Holy Roman Empire. Napoleon's European empire now stretched from the Atlantic to the Elbe in Spain, France, Holland, Belgium, Western Germany, and eventually all of Italy formed his renewed empire. Napoleon thus became the fifth head of a revived Western imperium since the days of Justinian. Napoleon's empire was not destined to be long-lived, however. A British-led coalition fought his defeat and abdication in 1814. This ended a period of 1,260 years since the imperial restoration under Justinian in 554. Thus, the prophecy in Revelation, chapter 13, verses 3 to 5, of the beast receiving a deadly wound, the wound being healed, and then the beast given authority to continue for 42 months was fulfilled. Napoleon abdication marked the end of an epoch. According to prophecy, there were yet to be two more attempted revivals of the glory and grandeur of ancient Rome. So there you have today's lesson on the beast and also things going on in the world that make us go, Tuning in with Betsy is back tomorrow afternoon at 5 o'clock. And don't forget, on August the 7th, we're going to have author and Messianic Jewish woman and terrific author. Her name is Bobby. She'll be my special guest. So she's also on Facebook. Just Google Bobby Ann Cole author, and you'll connect with a wonderful person. So I want to thank everybody who listened today to Tuning In with Betsy. Stay cool, stay focused, and don't get hoodwinked. Don't let anybody put one over on you like this voice recognition stuff. You're awake, you're alive, you're aware. Thank you for listening to Tuning In with Betsy. God bless you.